J6, number 15A.
All right, so we go on now from where we left off at our noon break. And we see then that whole tone we're looking at as of the 4,000-year period of principle, which has that Christ impulse behind principle. And we were looking then at the kingdom period. And we saw that the kingdom period, which is that period of 1 and 2 Samuel with the story of Saul and David, we could see then that that teaching is that we have to take the standpoint of principle in consciousness, to take the standpoint of the coincidence between God and man. That isn't something we take, we see. We see that the Christ impels us to take that standpoint. And therefore, it's that standpoint of divine consciousness which goes out from the Lord, from principle, and lets the Lord principle speak to the Lord in me. It lets principle God speak to the principled understanding of God within me. Now that's the kingdom period. But during the 4,000-year period, there is also the prophetic age, the age of the prophets. And here we see that the prophets just carry on from this prophetic message, that the prophetic age shows a continuation from the kingdom period, and that the operation of that divine principle. Now, when we take that standpoint of principle, that principle operates, and that it's the Christ, of course, operating as principle. And it operates in two aspects, and that is the whole subject of the Christ translation and retranslation, of course, where principle operates from an absolute standpoint, and that would be like the first translation that Mrs. Eddy showed us on page 115, which we've already talked about, that Christ takes the absolute standpoint, the absolute Christian Science standpoint, and operates then taking principle and translating principle down to every single specific situation. And then that Christ has a second standpoint, the relative standpoint of Christian Science in that retranslation, where it retranslates out everything then that isn't like the principle. So principle has a Christ, you see, where that principle operates within itself to bring itself down to every situation, as I said, the first translation. And then it has a second operation within principle. It retranslates out everything that isn't like principle through the first, second, and third degree. Now, we see then that this is the message of the minor prophets and the major prophets. So let's take a look at that. We'll see then that would be the next book we come to in the Bible, the books of the prophets. And what the prophets want to show us, if we take this term prophet as Mrs. Eddy defines it in the textbook on page 593, we will see that she defines prophet according to the first and second translation. She'll say that the prophet is a spiritual seer. And then she says it's a disappearance of material sense before the conscious facts of spiritual truth. So a prophet is first a spiritual seer, the first translation, which causes point two, the second translation, the disappearance of material sense. That's the second translation. How does it happen? Before the conscious facts of spiritual truth. So a prophet even goes beyond a Noah, where a Noah discerned what was real from what is unreal and pitched his ark against the flood of the second record of creation. A prophet goes on and takes that mind of Christ, which is conscious of, she says it's a spiritual seer, the disappearance of material sense before the conscious facts of spiritual truth. A prophet has the consciousness of these facts. A consciousness is something totally different than discernment. That's why as we go along, truth takes on the tonality of consciousness, that it becomes your consciousness. That all that we learned in the first 1,000-year period of the first day and the second 1,000-year period of the second day of spirit and the third 1,000-year period of the third day of soul and now the 4,000-year period, and as we go on to the fifth, to the sixth, to the seventh, that takes on a quality of consciousness. And as we saw, that we not only concept build, but we tonality build. Once we tonality build, that tone becomes the structure of our consciousness. So that consciousness is full of the tonality of the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, 7,000-year period. See, consciousness is something different than just discerning what is real and from what is unreal. It takes on the tonality. It becomes the structure of our consciousness. So, therefore, a prophet is a spiritual seer, she says, the disappearance of material sense before the conscious facts of spiritual truth. So, it's really this sense of divine consciousness which is at work here in the minor prophets, in that translation and retranslation is going on, as I said, within understanding or going on within consciousness. It's that divine consciousness which is always through understanding saying yes, yes to the somethingness of truth and nay, nay in understanding to the nothingness of error. And therefore, the minor prophets will show us that we have to go into captivity of the Christ. I mean, we murmur and we say, well, why do we have to, like Ellen said, well, will you please mention why we have to take up the second record of creation? Why do we have to go through these first and second translations in our life experience? Well, they want to show, because the prophet saw the necessity that each one of us had to go into captivity, so to speak, into Egypt, and to be weaned through the wilderness into the promised land. That the first translation of the Christ forces us to do that. That principle comes to each one of us in our understanding, and it forces us to see the allness of God in the nothingness of air. It forces us in understanding to say yea, yea to the somethingness of truth, and it forces us in understanding to say nay, nay to the nothingness of air. That's all positive. As I said earlier on concerning the second record of creation, that she says we go through to learn the cause of error and the effect of error and to never to believe a lie. We're learning to say nay, nay in understanding to the nothingness of error. So as Paul's life showed that he was in the bonds of Christ, and so are we. There is nothing we can do about it. We obviously would write another book of life for ourselves. We would have written another life experience according to the way we felt our life should go and how we felt it should turn out. But obviously, the Christ has been behind our life. We can see it. And that it is impelling us to go through this translation and retranslation, the first translation and the second translation, forcing us, because God comes to us, it has caused us out of Egypt, out of the first degree, through the wilderness of the second degree, into the promised land. So when we take a look then at the big fundamental message behind the Christ, the main point is it asks the question and answers the question, has principle no savior for ignorance and unwillingness concerning the deep things of God? You know that there at the Genesis 1:2, they said that there was darkness upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. So we say, has principle no savior for ignorance and those who are unwilling to know the deep things of God? And the answer of the minor prophets is yes, that principle has a Christ and that it's a Savior for everyone. We're all in the bonds of Christ. We all, the prophets are saying, are under the Christ translation and retranslation, and there's nothing we can do to avoid it. Again, as we know now, Mrs. Eddy says, we either go through it through science or suffering. So when we take a look at the Christ, the structure of the minor prophets, we see then that it is in a 4x4 structure, a little bit different than the days of creation. And this Christ matrix we can find in Kapler's book on the minor prophets in the light of Christian Science. And this particular matrix itself, I believe you can find, it's in the study aid. And you can find that in the study aid, perhaps we can find it. So we find then that this view of the Christ matrix is in our study aid on page 100, entitled The Christ Matrix, and then right below you see the various references to this, which would be the Kapler book on the minor prophets in the light of Christian Science. Now, again, some of us are new to this divine system of reference, so it doesn't matter. It's always a question of getting the atmosphere or flavor for a subject, and one knows that down the line we would study it as time goes on. I always recommend studying the Bible in its order, studying the book of Genesis, as either John Dorley or Kapler have it, along with the Bible, and then their books on Exodus, and then on Joshua and Judges, and then on 1 and 2 Samuel. Take the Bible in its order. It was written as the way of life, the book of life. It's, to me, very intelligent to approach the Bible in its orderly way, as it has been for everyone else who finally sees the necessity of an ordered approach to this subject. So I just show this to show always the visions of things to come for those of us who are new and are just beginning. I recommend starting at the beginning, as I said, with Genesis. But as we move on towards this 4,000-year period, we see then that it is the minor prophets are in the structure of a 4x4 matrix. They're therefore under the roof category of the Word Christ, Christianity, and Science, from the levels of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. I'd mentioned earlier that we only took a very superficial look at the days of creation from the standpoint of the first category of the seven synonymous terms, but we could have looked at the days of creation from the category of the fourfold operation and also from the categories of the levels if we wanted to, but I didn't want to. It was too advanced for where we are right at the moment. So right now, we just take a look at this of the minor prophets, which would be Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. They're all the minor prophets. But then along the line here, we have the major prophets of Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. Now, this particular form is what we call a matrix, a 4x4 matrix, but it's all under the roof category of the Christ. And so, therefore, though we will see that the epistles of Paul are under the same 4x4 structure, and we'll also see that this Christian Science textbook, Science and Health, is under the same 4x4 structure, what differentiates it is its subject, its theme, which is the Christ. This is the story of the Christ. We will see that the epistles have the same structure, but it's telling the story of Christianity. We will see that the Christian Science textbook has the same structure, but it's telling the story of science, Christian Science. So therefore, here what we call the subject or the A is the Christ, And it is presented in 2 points. Remember that Christ at the point of principle has two, principle has two operations, as I said now, and Mrs. Eddy shows on page 115. The first operation is the first translation. We see the first translation graphically shown in this matrix by what we call the verticals. That the word vertical in this translation, that means under the heading the word, which is the monopotency of God, that would be the first translation. That's the tonality of the first translation of the word. The first translation in the, it, through its aspect of the Christ, the manifestation of Christ-likeness, that is the first translation from the standpoint of Christ running vertically. And then the first translation from Christianity, the preservation of the idea, that's the vertical running down here. That's the first translation. And then the first translation from the standpoint of science, the operation of the idea in its principle, is what we would call then the science vertical. All the vertical impact would be the first translation, absolute Christian science. As it has its impact on the human, the second translation is shown through the horizontals, and that would be the tonality of Christian science. The tonality of the word, where the divine purpose is defined. The second translation from the Christ, the enforcement of the translation of two-ness into oneness. The second translation from Christianity, the disappearance of evil and the appearance of good rendered inescapable. And the second translation from the standpoint of science, the understanding of God. So you have your verticals and horizontals. The first translation would be the verticals, and the second translation are the horizontals. And I won't go into it in detail, but you see every prophet, minor prophet, or would be a point of intersection. Like Hosea comes as a point of intersection between the first translation of the word as the monopotency of God, intersecting the second translation of the word where the divine purpose is defined, you get Hosea. Hosea is just a symbol for that point of intersection. Or you would get the monopotency of God good, coming down to the next minor prophet, Joel, coming the first translation meeting of the monopotency of God, meeting now the Christ, the enforcement of the translation of two-ness into oneness gives us the prophet Joel. Or the monopotency of God good, the first translation coming down to the next point, meeting the second translation at the point of Christianity, of the disappearance of evil and the appearance of good rendered inescapable, gives you Amos. And then the first translation of the word of the monopotency of God good, coming down to meet the second translation of a science, the understanding of God, gives us Isaiah. And that's, see these there, so we get point of intersections between the first and second translation in the word. The first translation, as I said, always being the vertical, and the second translation being the horizontal. In the word, and the same in the Christ, you get the first translation in the vertical of the Christ, meeting the second translation is the horizontal, which gives us first the Christ as the word Obadiah, then the Christ as the Christ Jonah, and then the Christ as Christianity Micah, and the Christ as science Jeremiah. You see the first and second translation meeting, giving you those under the tone of Christ. Then the first translation under the tonality of the preservation of the idea, Christianity, meeting the second translation on Christian science, where Christianity as the word gives us Nahum, Christianity as the Christ gives us Habakkuk, Christianity as Christianity gives us Zephaniah, Christianity as science gives us Ezekiel. And then the first translation meeting this first translation of the operation of the idea in its principle, meeting the second translation, first of science, the first translation from science as the word would give you Haggai, then the first translation from the point of science meeting the second translation of the Christ gives you Zechariah, and then the first translation of science meeting the second translation there of Christianity gives you Malachi, and the first translation of science meeting there, the second translation of science of science gives you Daniel. So you get the first translation meeting the second translation from the standpoint of the word Christ, Christianity, and science gives you this matrix, and each one tells a story. And it is a wonderful story where the first translation at the standpoint of the word is saying how that the all real power is vested in God, the divine principle. So the word at the point of first translation is just saying that all power is vested in God. That's why you get the monopotency of God. And that standpoint that the all real power is in God, the divine principle, never in person, that is the first translation. That all power of God comes to every situation. And so that monopotency of God in the word runs vertically through Hosea, Joel, Amos, and Isaiah. They have all that in common, that first translation of the monopotency of God. They only differ in the second translation, in so far as Hosea is showing that all real power is vested in God, and Hosea says, in spite of all opposition to the divine purpose. And then Joel says, yes, that all real power is vested in God, and that causes something to happen. That enforces really ignorance and unwillingness to recognize itself as being erroneous. Therefore, it forces the translation of two-ness into oneness. And Amos says, yes, that all power of God, that omnipotence of God is the only, is coming to me. And it's causing something to happen in the retranslation. It's making everything yield to the point where man accepts God's monopotency. So it causes then the disappearance of evil and the appearance of good rendered inescapable. And Isaiah says, yes, there's only the monopotency of God going on. And he says, and that is so that misunderstanding is resolved into divine understanding, and we leave only the understanding of God. Can you hear how we begin to reason? Oh, how that monopotency of God comes through all those prophets. But Hosea shows the monopotency of God in spite of opposition to the divine purpose. Joel shows the monopotency of God have an effect of the enforcement of the translation of two-ness or the two-valued logic into the one-valued logic. And Amos shows the monopotency of God causing the disappearance of evil and the appearance of good. And Isaiah shows the monopotency of God good resolving all misunderstanding. It's terrific. And so you could see that also how that, as I showed, that first translation works out within Obadiah, there where we have the manifestation of Christ-likeness. That's the first translation. It comes to us, really. It wants to show in the first translation from the standpoint of the Christ that in this monopotency of God lies the ability to bring everything back into the likeness of principle. That's why you have the manifestation of Christ-likeness. The Christ picks up from the word and says, yes, there's just this first translation going on of the monopotency of God good. That's all that's going on. And that has an ability to translate itself down and bring everything back into the Christ-likeness. And therefore Obadiah says, yes, that is translating itself down, bringing everything back into the Christ-likeness in spite of all opposition to it. And Jonah says, and it has an effect of translating the two-ness into oneness. And Micah says, yes, and that's going to cause the disappearance of evil and good coming forth. And Jeremiah says, yes, that's going to resolve misunderstanding, and it's going to happen. but it keeps the tonality of the first translation, that Christ-likeness is going to happen. So it flows along, showing that that first translation of the monopotency of God good, which is going to manifest the Christ-likeness everywhere, has an outcome of Christianity, which is going to make the idea obedient to the principle. And therefore, it is Nahum there that says, yes, of course, now, it says that the idea is going to be preserved because it will obey the principle, that the Christ is forcing every idea to obey the principle. And Nahum says, and that's in spite of all opposition to it. And Habakkuk says that the preservation of the idea, that the Christ is going to force the idea to be preserved, and that's going to translate any sense of resistance of duality in the idea to accept that preservation of the idea. And that preservation of the idea, Zephaniah says, yes, it's coming, and it's going to, through the second translation, have the disappearance of evil for good. And Ezekiel said, yes, the idea is coming. The preservation of the idea is coming to everyone, and it's going to get rid of the misunderstanding within the idea. Just a story that flows through the first translation meeting the second translation. Then from science, which is talking how the operation of the idea is in its principle, showing that this is all going on for the manifesting, the operation of the idea and the principle. All this is going on to see how the idea is always operating in its principle. So you have the operation of the idea and its principle, that the first translation is coming to us so that idea is one with its principle, translating down principle to idea, causing the retranslation out of the idea, everything that isn't like principle, you see. So that first translation is happening to the idea so that the idea becomes one with principle, isn't it? That's why it goes on. That's a science behind it. So that this whole Christ translation in a first translation is happening, the science says, so that the operation of the idea is seen in its principle. That's why we have gone through the translation, retranslation, to show us in our principle. And Haggai says, yes, that's right. Let that first translation happen. Let that come to us. And let that first translation happen to us so that we are seen as one with our principle through the translation and retranslation. And that translation and retranslation is going to happen in spite of all opposition to the divine purpose. And Zechariah says, yes, and let that Christ translation happen to make the idea one with the principle. And it does it by the enforcement, really, of any sense of two-ness into oneness. And Malachi says, yes, let that operation of the Christ translation, that first translation, make the idea one with its principle. And that's going to happen because it's going to have the disappearance of evil through the second translation, causing the appearance of good within us. And then Daniel says, yes, let that operation of the Christ idea come to us, that first translation, which will, through the retranslation, make that idea one with its principle, which will take away misunderstanding and leave understanding, so that the idea is absolutely, through understanding, is one with its principle. And that's what the whole translation hinged it on, was understanding. Within the understanding, we let the first translation happen. We welcome the first translation as it brings out the second translation in our life. So these minor prophets are showing us what happens when the Christ brings principle right down to our situation and overturns everything that goes on within our life. And Daniel says, and that happens within understanding. It takes away misunderstanding, and all there is left at the point of Daniel is understanding. It all went on within understanding. But we can see how a subject in the Bible is presented in such a science. How that how these minor prophets wants to show us that there is this first translation, and that first translation happens according to the...